This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 355, Summer.
Is that a special number?
I don't know. I just had a long pause there, so I thought, I don't know, I didn't know what to say. 355 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and I don't think there's anything special about 355.
And I didn't think there was necessarily either. This episode, we'd like to thank co-producer Samantha. To find out more about what a co-producer is and how you might become one if you so choose, stay tuned to later in the show. We will give you more information.
So kind of announcements this week, not really announcements. They're really more like housekeeping. So mine is more of the personal nature. this is going to sound dumb and petty, but all the money goes to charity. So I have a side bet with my partner that I can sell
about this.
200 masks. And if I sell 200 masks, he's going to buy me a very fancy Le Creuset Dutch oven. Now, the stickler is I have to sell 200 and I'm at 189. So, and again, all the money goes to charity. So what I'm saying is that he's already purchased it. It's in my house and I'm not allowed to touch it. So if you guys could do me a solid and buy 11 more masks, I can use my new Dutch oven.
Or, and don't forget, we have Christmas coming up. So
we do, but it has to be, but we had to have like some sort of a qualifier. It had to be masks because it was when we tried to do a dollar amount, I was like, but some things cost more than other things. And I was like, it'd be easier if we just say masks. So, it has to be masks.
So what is he going to buy you or get you, or what did you already get?
It is a 4-quart Dutch oven from Le Creuset, which is like,
good monkey.
He already got it? He already bought it because we were going so fast, man. Like we went from 0 masks to like 160 masks in a month. So we were like, oh, you're going to blaze through that and not have a problem. So he was like, I'm just going to go ahead and get it so that, you know, I'm ready and I can be like, haha, here you go. But yeah, now it just taunts me from the other room. So if you want to help us donate this money to charity, and we're so close to, well, we're more than close. We are over $400 right now going to.
Yes. And the reason you haven't heard from us regarding giving that money to charity is because the way that they pay out, or the way that it is being paid out, is by check, and the check is being sent to Summer, but Summer's not at her home right now.
I'm so not, because
it's going to be a little bit, but every single penny between, well, the start of it and the first payout was August, I think. Every single penny between when the shop was started to the end of the year, or gained through the end of the year, regardless of when it's paid out to some, will go toward the charity that we mentioned.
Yeah. And let me, since we're doing this, let me go ahead and pull up the total so I can tell you exactly how much money is going to Broadway Cares Equity Fights COVID. So the total we have earned to donate to Broadway Cares Equity Fights COVID, that's not the name, but that's what I'm calling it. you guys have donated $465.64. So that has not all been paid out to us yet. A part of it was mailed by check, but like I said, I came to town for surgery in August and I haven't been home yet. So when I go home, I will be depositing the check and donating it directly to the Broadway Cares. So it's not been spent. It's not been winnowed away anywhere. It is literally, we've not forgotten. But if you'd like to help me open a Le Creuset Dutch oven so that I can use it.
Okay, so let's do this. So if we hit was there a time frame for it, or just when we have to hit 200?
No, there's no time frame.
Okay, so the thing is, the Dutch oven would be great going into fall and winter. If she doesn't get to do it fall or winter, it would just be so sad. So if we can get it done, hopefully sooner than later, when it happens, she'll get it. So it's when we hit 200 masks, right? Summer will get it, and she doesn't have
the best
Wi-Fi.
Of my fancy.
Oh no! Oh no!
Oh, I have to do more. You want me to unbox it
now? summer, let me go there. So Summer does not have great Wi-Fi up currently in her northern home, but she does have a cell phone, a great cell phone that will take video. So what she will do is she will do a brief, does not have to be long, like, you know, less, just a few minutes, max. She will do an unboxing of the Dutch oven, and so you can see how pretty it is, what it looks like, and all that. So yes, she will do a petite unboxing.
I mean, it's worth it. I mean, like I said, it's just a personal plea. Just if you want to put me out of my misery, and you don't have to. I mean, I could go on and buy 11 masks if I wanted to. He would never know. But I'm not going to do that. He would know when they showed up.
Oh, that's fine. To complete our housekeeping discussion, for the next few weeks, probably a month, month and a half, to be honest, this show, the Elmender Podcast, is going to be bi-weekly. So we have a few things that led us to this decision. We have some scheduling stuff going on. Again, Summer's currently local, but soon, at some point, she's going to be, we're a little bit ahead, but not super, super far ahead. So at some point, Summer will be returning up north, and that changes how we record. It doesn't change that we record. It just changes things. And it, as she adapts with her hand and everything, we just don't know what might be affected as far as us and our scheduling routine, if you will. This will allow us not only to have a little more time between episodes to make sure that I can get things done, she can get things done, and we can adjust to the new normal as Summer regains the use of the hand she hasn't really used in about a month?
Over a month.
Over a month?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the 24th?
It was August 24th.
Okay. So there's that, but we are not going to not use that time.
Well, I think it's important to point out that there is a lot of crossover currently between our two fandoms. There are two fandoms that we are involved in. Obviously, Outlander is one of them, if you're listening to this. And the other fandom is the Discovery of Witches fandom, which we have another podcast that we've been sorely neglecting for a little while because we've been so focused, and Outlander got so hot and heavy with the releasing of the episodes. And then when my arm went down, I couldn't do the editing anymore. We do have a drop dead date of January and change for the season 2 of A Discovery of Witches coming out in the BBC. And then we'll have it shortly thereafter here in the States. And that being said, we still haven't gotten our season 1 stuff up, and we've got it recorded. I just haven't been able to edit it.
And those episodes are not short. They're like 2 to 3 hours each. So there may be some, and there are multiple people, so like more than two. So it's a lot, it's heavy lifting. Whoever was doing it, it's by itself heavy lifting. And the obviously, I mean, if it hasn't happened since Summer wasn't able to do, you know, more editing, it hasn't happened for me. even though working from home, I thought, oh, maybe I'll have more time. Nope. So by us taking a slight, maybe sidestep, not a backstep, a slight schedule shift for a chunk of time will allow us to continue our read-along. Again, we're not going anywhere, but also to get up the stuff because we do, and it will be before December. It'll actually be before the end of November. That's the aim. So fans of our other show, the All Souls Podcast, we are coming back. We haven't gone away. It's just, we'll be, our episodes will be, we will be finishing season 1, okay? And then so we can prep and enjoy together and celebrate together season 2 when it comes out. And what about the read-along, which was sorely neglected? We got halfway through, and not everything was posted. We got halfway through A Discovery of Witches. It is still going to be done. That is our plan. What we will do is get first priority is those 4 episodes of the show, for the TV show. And then we have 2, if not 3, episodes of the read-along left that we can also thread back through. And those are a lot shorter, and those are only 2 people, max 3, but I think most of them are 2 people. So all I'm saying is we are taking a slight change to be able to get up some stuff so that we are ready to jump into season 2 of Discovery of Witches once it comes out. And if you have no idea that we had a second podcast, we urge you to to go over and check it out, allsoulspod.com. And the funny thing is, not funny, haha, but like, you know, wow, is that out of all that, we have about 30 episodes. And out of all of those episodes, like, we have comparatively, as far as proportionally, we have so many events and interviews for such a wee podcast. We hit the ground running, and we don't do things. I guess you can't say we don't do things halfway, because we got halfway through the season, but we don't mess around, and we are coming back so that we can cover everything and all that. So thank you for sticking with us this long. Let's get into our content.
And now on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read-along, starting with chapter 22, entitled Ginger.
It's an English word, actually.
I still think it's French. I don't want to say it.
Ensorcellement.
See, you could at least try to make it sound French.
No, because it's not. I mean,
it looks like it should be mal at the end.
Its etymology, obviously, is French roots, but it's not a French word in this time.
It's more fun if it is.
Big bad Tom Christie didn't come back for the surgery, but he sent his daughter Malva for the ointment, Claire promised. We are formally introduced to Malva here.
Is it Malva? Malva? Is it Malva? I think it's Malva, isn't it? Malva Christie?
I go by Davina. Okay. Not saying she's the end be all end all, but she's the only one I've heard pronounce this other than people saying their own thing. So I am going with Malva.
I like to think it's way too close to the word vulva.
Yes, you said that before.
It's not a nice name, Tom Christie. Why would you name your child Malva? What is it, short for something?
We are formally introduced to her here, or maybe really introduced to her here, or the beginnings of it. Now, the Christies arrived on the ridge in book 5, right? So we did have there was a scene where we had the three Christies. We had Tom, Alan, and Malva. And the funny thing is that if you go back and read, because I said this when we were doing book 5, when they were introduced during our read along, I said, but I could have sworn she had gray eyes. And then in the book, or in book 5, when they're introduced, her features are described, and she does not have gray eyes. And I was like, what? And so I looked ahead in book 6, where they're mentioned 8,700 times. And yes, she's got gray eyes, just like her father does. So I don't know what color eyes her father had in book 5, but we're sticking with the one that happens the most. And that's book 6, where all of them are. And I think even Alan has the same eyes. Anyway, the reason I bring that up is because it's funny to see It's fun to see this, the inconsistencies when they pop out. And you may not have noticed it unless you were, you know, had a podcast about it where you talked about it way too much.
or remembered,
little things like that. Anyhow, yes. So even though they arrived on the ridge and we learned about them, and I think saw them one time in book 5, book 6 is where they're really fleshed out, as Tom has been now a bit. So Malva came for the ointment for her father. We're introduced to her formally. Quote, the girl was dark-haired, slender, and quiet, but seemed intelligent, unquote. And Claire tells her how to apply. Claire tells her how to apply the ointment for her dad. And he is supposed to come in a week from that time to have his stitches out. But rather than leave, Malva stays.
So you were talking about the gray eyes. I only remember you talking about it from my first read.
From book 5?
Because again,
from your first read?
Yeah.
That was 10 years ago.
Exactly. So
we didn't talk about it.
And I didn't remember it then because to me, it was not largely boo-boo, gray eyes, right? It's not an important thing. However, when Malva showed up at the surgery to get the ointment, she made a point of saying gray eyes again. So I'm like, yes. Okay, so clearly this is an important thing. Well, at least Ginger's made it important because she's made it something that I've paid attention to now.
Summer's like, well, I see it whether it's good or not, whether right. it's important or not. I see
don't know
it.
If it means anything, but I definitely did notice she was mentioned the having gray eyes.
Well, good. I'm glad I hammered that in for you. But rather than leave, Claire's like, okay, we're done. You can go now. But rather than leave, Malva stays. Seems she's interested in Dr. Rawlings' book.
The description of the pictures that quote unquote caught her eye. I mean, this kind of is like snuff porn. Like,
oh, it, Lord.
For kids, I mean, not for kids. That's what I'm going to say. It's not for kids. What I'm saying is that for that time period to, ooh, there's a squirrel on the fence right in front of my window. Squirrel. And I just got that distracted dog story and I totally understand now. He keeps jumping up and off the fence and now he's shaking his tail at me. Okay, he's gone. For that time period, nobody really drew like that. And especially when you have an upbringing like Malva Christie, who is so repressed with her very religious father, that to see pictures like this and to see descriptions like this.
I wouldn't even necessarily call her repressed. She will absolutely become repressed, but she's extremely sheltered.
Sheltering leads to repression. I'm just...
At 16 or 15, however old she is, I don't think she may be borderline repressed, but I don't think she's fully repressed yet to be like something needs to be like coming out that you're battening down to be repressed, right?
Anyone from this time period would be shocked by the contents of the book. I'm just stating that she was extra, like, it's not even just surprised, but really excited about seeing it. Like,
intrigued.
Yeah, like she was way too into it. And plus, like, you think about the drawings that she actually described, like one of them was like removing a fetus through a hole in a lady's stomach. Like, that's yes. not even something you hear of. Actually, I don't know that it was her stomach because they talked about removing a dead fetus. It might have been like an abortion style, like through the vagina. And I don't know because they didn't describe that, but the way they were saying the cartridge or whatever it was, it sounded like a DNC.
So we'll get there.
Okay.
Although you've mostly gone there. So before it's opened, she looks over and she notices this book. And she may have noticed it before when she was there. Not insides, obviously, but the fact that this book exists.
Well, she knows that thing existed. Her dad was calling it her book of shadows. Don't look at her evil black little book. It's full of spells.
The funny thing is that, yes, she knows of this book. She's been here before. But yeah, we learn later on that her dad has certain, well, not certain knowledge, but certain opinion of this book. But what's funny is before they even look at the book, she says something about that wee book. And then the way it's, although its dimensions aren't ever given to us, I don't think it's a wee book. It sounds like it's a kind of a big book.
I feel like it would have to be. Just because if it's not, she would have already overfilled this journal with stuff. And this one has not only her stuff in it, it still has Rawlings' stuff in it, which means he was prolific and, you know, and wrote.
He got a big book to, yeah, for
that's
his.
The thing.
For
I'm like, there's just no way that life. If it was like a little tiny medical journal, you know what I mean? If it was just her little like write in me book, that it would not have already been more than filled.
And the reason I thought it was interesting about the size and then her calling it wee book is that even though the author didn't make anything of it except for use the term, neither of the characters made anything of her use of that term. I thought it very funny, like tongue in cheek, that it seemed like, if I'm not mistaken, it seemed like the use of sometimes throughout the book, it's not just like Jamie says it all the time, not about that book, but about different things. Scots will call something we that is in no ways we.
I feel like, to me, it felt like it was a way to make it almost dismissive.
To make it less, yeah.
And because you see that a lot. It's almost that's like, true. Almost condescending. It can be. I don't think she was meaning it that way. But I mean, a lot of people do that. Like if you're like, oh, like if I have what I feel is an important job and somebody else doesn't think it's important, they're like, oh, you're going to your wee job today. You know, it's like a way of making it less than. And that's, I think, how it's always been treated. And to me, it felt like it was more of that than that it was a size statement.
Yeah. And so that was the first thing I found kind of entertaining about this book. It's like, oh, it's this wee book. Yeah, it absolutely could have been a way of kind of knocking it down a bit or making it a little bit more comfortable to talk about, even, especially given what she what she says. But yes, so Claire shows her a few pages and then she lets her look through it on her own. And as Summer said, one of the first pages Malva turns to is the drawing of the removal of a dead child from the uterus. How charming. And I don't know what's more, not entertaining, but more intriguing, more interesting. Quote, Malva didn't seem to be distressed by the drawings, though. She was bug-eyed with interest. Unquote.
I'm serious. She's seeing her first porn. This is her porn. Summer. It's like, ooh, show me more, daddy.
Well, this would, I will say this. This is definitely, it's definitely not the traditional porn, obviously. But, and I don't mean move, I don't mean like moving pictures. I mean any form of sexual graphic visuals, right? However, and we're not going to get ahead of ourselves, but I will make this statement because you mentioned it was her porn. That kind of drawing, medical drawings, maybe drawings of autopsy or let alone photos. Yeah, but we're not there yet, right? That's like that's about a century later. My point is, while this is not traditional porn as far as sexual images, this type of image could be porn-like for a person who is more of, say, a Black Jack Randall person, right? Mm-hmm. Although he's definitely related to this. He gets sexual gratification from hurting someone else. So I'm not comparing her to him. I'm just saying this type of image, which would not be the norm, which would not be something in the normal or average person would quote unquote get off on. If it's that intriguing, it doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you, because Claire finds this intriguing and there's nothing wrong with her in this realm. However, I would offer, and I'm not saying anyone in this chapter is a person like this, but I would offer that even though it wasn't the sexual nature, I do believe that you could classify this type of thing, even though it wasn't created for that at all. Some people absolutely, there comes my Sean Connery, absolutely. Some people absolutely would find that porny.
I'm trying to find
where
she says it, but I love how she talks about the drawings themselves, because even she talks about Dr. Rawlings. She's like, he wasn't even a really good artist. Like, he was not good at drawing, but his drawings were really good at portraying, I believe, the brutality or the something about his. And I was trying to look it up again, but I'm like scanning pages, which is not helpful. But then I wonder what the book would look like if Brianna was drawing in it.
Oh, Lord.
Here it is. Rawlins hadn't been an artist, but he had a brutal knack for rendering the reality of a situation. So the brutal was in there. Brutal knack for rendering the reality of the situation. But again, I can't tell if there's if he was removing the dead child. That was very specific. If he's removing the dead child, because I don't think you use dilation and curettage without going through the vagina. So I feel like it's definitely by the vagina birth, right? But that would be a really shocking picture to see. I mean, imagine what that picture is. It's got to be a picture of her vagine, of legs akimbo, right? Legs open.
Summer, there may not have been any legs. It could have just been...
Are you saying she was a legless woman with a dead child in her?
Summer, no. Okay. But why go to the trouble of drawing the legs when they're not meaningful for the process?
I'm not saying you saw the legs. What I'm saying is the legs are open and you're having a view of a vagine. And with instruments inside of a vagina. If you didn't know what it was, it's some weird porn. For sure weird porn. Not my kind of porn. Anyway, as you were.
So Claire, so as I said, Malva is looking at these images and looking through this book with bug-eyed interest. Claire is watching her with interest. Could it be? Nah. Nah. We'll have to wait and see if that question's answered. I'm not going to ask that question because that would be giving it away.
Just wait. If you were an outsider.
Not an outlander.
No. If you were an outsider. So you were not part of this conversation. But let's just say you were like a Mrs. Bug walking by. Or anybody who already thought that Claire was kind of a witch. and you walked by this conversation and you saw Claire with her book of spells, because that's the impression, pushing her book of spells in front of this young, impressionable girl, would you not think that she's like trying to make her a witch too?
Oh, goodness. No.
You wouldn't?
I don't think she was pushing it on her.
She literally pushed the book closer to Malva. If you were just watching and you could have seen it from the back, like what if you couldn't even see Malva's face? You just saw Claire pushing her special spell book in front of her.
Well, then you'd have to be, well, not blind, because you're just saying, you're talking about angle or view. You're not talking about not seeing.
I'm just saying if you were not part of this conversation and you
had already expressed interest before Claire moved the book. So it's not, Claire wasn't trying to get her to see more because she wanted her to see more. Claire was responding to her bug-eyed interest and her fascination. And so Claire, being the scientist she is, being the feminist she is, being someone not of that time, someone who wants to encourage girls, women, to have interests, to do what they would like, right? To have a calling, to have something that they can lean on and make their own money with, all of that. Although that's like taking a huge leap. Of course she would want to, I would say, support that, because we're not talking about a calling yet or anything, but she absolutely would want to help because she knows, you already said, she's extremely, well, I said she was sheltered, but she's extremely sheltered with her upbringing. So she, especially with Malva, because Claire has maybe not met to the degree and spent time speaking with every other person on the ridge, all the new ridge dwellers. All the Protestant, the newbies, right? The fisher folk, whatever. Mm-hmm. Or the highland, excuse me, the coastal fisher folk people who came in to join the goblins. But she has spent a decent amount of time with Malva's father, and knows about Malva's father and his relationship with the men of Ardsmuir, his relationship with Jamie. And so she definitely knows, she doesn't know exactly how Tom Christie is with his daughter, but she can absolutely be sure that he's going to be a stern father, not let her likely read anything other than the Bible. You know what I mean? She knows, or can only guess, can only imagine that she's in a very, not only of the time, but the time plus her father is in a very, you know, structured environment and doesn't have a lot of opportunity because of her dad, or because of the females at the time, but also because of the very strict nature of her family. So I see it as, yeah, surprising, but I don't think it's Claire, you know, trying to push it. I think Claire's just trying to say, oh, you're in that, interests you, okay, go for it. Because someone like Mrs. Bug, I mean, yeah, okay, age aside, Mrs. Bug would probably take a look at that and like want to barf or say, oh my god, and just, you know, walk away. She doesn't like being in her surgery. So Claire is finally confronted with someone who is not afraid, and not just not afraid, who's freaking interested.
I'm just saying, it's not like all of the reasons, whatever adjective you need that you were giving won't save her from being hung at the gallows as a witch if the wrong people get upset.
That's a different discussion, but I understand what you're saying. So Claire explains to Malva that she writes things down so that she can go back to stuff she's done and see what worked, what hadn't worked, but also so that others after her may learn from what she writes. And if Claire didn't learn from that book, because they have discussion of, well, oh, so you only have to learn from a book. You don't need to be an apprentice with anyone. Claire said, well, I mean, it's best to learn from people. But she did say that she learned from many books.
Yeah,
and
right?
Many, many other doctors.
Lots of books.
Yes.
And it's books like she's writing right now that will be the forefather of the textbooks that we have later in life.
And she has many names, our Claire. She says, yes, she's called a doctor, and she, Banlicht or something like that. There's a number of names that she gives, or words for that. Conjure woman is one of them. And when she says Banlicht, Malva, unsurprisingly, has never heard much, if any, Gaelic. And she's not a fan. Quote, An expression of mild derision crossed her face, unquote. And the thing is, the mild derision didn't happen when she didn't understand the word. The mild derision came when Claire told her, oh, so you would never have heard any of the Gaelic. So once she's like, oh, it's Gaelic. Well, poo, my dad told me about that stuff. So yeah, she had a look of mild derision on her face. And when Claire mentions Dr. Rawlings, Malva puts two and two together. Yes, it's the same man buried in their cemetery there on the ridge.
So I believe that everyone, and no matter where you live, has a place near where you live that you think about with derision. For instance, when I lived in Georgia, it was people from Alabama. When I lived, I can only think of suburbs around Northern California, but I don't want to call them out because that's way too specific.
Because she lives here now.
Right. But I'm just saying, I'm like, this is something that absolutely everyone should understand, even if they don't think they do.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
People are like, how could you not like Highlanders? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, well, people from Georgia really don't like Alabama. And I promise you, people from Alabama really don't like another state. And it's like, it's a prevalent thing.
It's not just state, it's country. So
exactly.
There's all kinds of levels. Absolutely. As Malva has to leave to get her dad his dinner, Claire tells her she's welcome back anytime to read the book. And then she asks if she wants to accompany her. You know, by the way, you were interested in that foul picture. Would you like to come with me tomorrow to... I have to go remove a growth from Granny Macbeth's ear tomorrow. I could use a pair of hands. Now, Malva is not sure what her father will say, but she says she'll convince him. And yes, she'll come.
Do you think she actually convinced him, or do you think she just didn't tell him?
I don't think that's the important part of the sentence. I think the important part of the sentence is that she'll come.
You're not wrong, but it makes me wonder, because again, this is my second reading of this book, and I don't recall all of the ins and outs, which is kind of exciting. It's funny when I do read the chapters, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, yeah, I remember that too. But until I reread it, I was like, what? But reading that chapter... when she was talking about, she's like, no, don't worry about it. I'll talk him into it. I'll convince him. And I'm just like, I wonder if she actually told him where she was going.
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know, because Dana does not tell us, I don't think. But
she doesn't even talk about going and taking care of Granny's
ear.
Feet. Like, they move it on.
Feet. Did you say feet?
Wasn't it her feet?
No, it's her ear.
Oh, I thought it said feet. Clearly.
Foot, ear.
Was there a foot mentioned anywhere else?
You and I talked about legs when you talked about the vaheen, and I said he probably didn't draw the legs.
I don't generally talk about feet in reference to vaginas, because there's a lot of leg in between.
There's a long distance. Yes, it's a long distance relationship, Summer.
Maybe it was because it was a growth that, yes. I was thinking, I don't know why I think growths are on feet. I don't know.
A growth?
We can move on. Come on, we're getting flu shots today. We got to wrap this up.
Yes, she'll come. And she says, quote, it'll be all right, I'm sure. I'll tell him I've had a peek at your black book, and it's by no way a being spells in it at all, but only receipts for teas and purges. I'll maybe not say about the drawings, though.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Unquote.
Those will be our secret, which is the beginning of problems.
So yes, Thomas Christie thought her big black book was filled with spells. By the look on Malva's face, Claire sees he might have been right.
Well, she has put a
been
spell.
Been ensorcelled.
Exactly.
Correct.
And that was chapter 22. Sorry, I had to figure out what that was. Chapter 22. Moving on to chapter 23, entitled Anesthesia. Which, as a person who has recently had surgery on my wrist, which is not my hand, but still close enough, I would not have sat through it alone without anesthesia. Bible verses would not have been enough to keep me from moving as they were cutting into me.
So Claire is playing with gas. She knocks herself out for funsies. We find out that she confirms she has made ether. And it smells nasty.
Yeah, but she gets hella high afterwards.
Mrs. Bug lets us know. And she's made it and plans to use it on Tom Christie first. The plan for was Malva to convince him to have the surgery, and Claire's job is to convince him of the ether. Jamie asks if ether could kill. And reflectively, she says, yes, it could. Even in her time, there were accidents and incidents.
It's like she but never read Cider worth, House Rules.
Oh, goodness. But it's worth the risk, she says. So I never got, I'm just going to ask you this here because you this here, you hear this, whatever. I'm going to ask you a question, Summer.
Do
it. So after that little scene in the book or in the surgery with Mrs. Bug and Jamie about the ether, we flash over to the bugs. Now, I understand the purpose of the conversation. I enjoyed that. What was the literary or the story purpose for the plot purpose for going to the bugs? Was there? I couldn't. Maybe I read too fast.
Let me look.
And Mrs. Bug wasn't there. It was just Jamie and Claire and Mr. Bug.
I have a question for you while I'm looking for that.
Yeah.
I don't recall Rosamund Lindsay.
Who said that?
In the book, she says, oh, she was thinking about people who accidentally die. And
I think that was in book 5. The woman who hurt her thumb on something and Claire wanted to remove her hand and she said no. So she died of either she died because
she wouldn't let her cut her hand off.
Because it ended up being blood poisoning or something. And then Claire tried to treat her. Oh, that's right. And then Claire tried to treat her with one of her batches of penicillin. And she ended up, I think it was, she died of anaphylaxis or something like that.
Okay. So plot point wise, all I can see is there, Jamie and Claire are walking through the woods to the bug's house and talking about Tom Christie. And then they get there and Bug indicates that Mr. Bug indicates that Mrs. Bug is up at their house. And he says, no. And then she goes, no, I'm going to forage for a bit. Mrs. Bug forgot her needlework, though. May I fetch it for her? So she was getting something for Mrs. Bug from the cabin while she was going out foraging as well. And I'm assuming Jamie had some other reason to talk to Bug or just wanted, they were having a conversation while she was going to get the needlework and go forage. They do not fully flesh out why they're at the bugs, but it was a good conversation to have been a part of for her to have overheard, I guess, because this was a big chapter about hands. And
yes, of course. Yes.
Not being able to use hands, whether or not it was worth it to lose your hands. Like it was just, you know, it was just a lot. And, you know, and it was also a lot about how the human body, I loved how she said it was plastic. I think plastic was a really interesting choice because there are a lot of other things that it could be compared to, but about how it kind of, how the body tends to fill in and make do with what's left. We're not like octopuses that literally regrow limbs, which would be super cool, but we aren't.
We don't have an actual reason why they had to come.
Correct.
But they're there. I'm not like arguing with them coming because it was interesting.
This could have been like a daily meeting that Jamie had with Mr. Bug.
Oh, because he is the factor. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's, again, me making supposition. Just guessing. It could be this. No one knows for sure. Well, Diana does. And Diana's reason might be, well, I needed them to talk to Archbug. So I had them go.
So in this scene, regardless of the purpose or regardless of the reason they're there, Claire uses this opportunity to check out Arch's hand. And it also gives her a chance for a little comparative hand anatomy. We learn more of Arch's story, when and how his fingers were chopped off by an axe. Well, he was a bowman and he had fought in, I don't know exactly which battle, but I think he mentions the town, the village or whatever of Glen Shiel. So that may have been the name of the battle. I don't know. But I believe he fought. And I don't know if that battle that he got his fingers cut off for fighting in, if that was a part of the first rising or not the first, but the 1715 rising. But regardless, if I'm not mistaken, Archbug did fight in the 15 rising. So anyway,
when did they say Glen Shiels? Because they're talking about the Frasers at Glen Helm.
Yeah, that I didn't make note of the dates or of other names. But yeah, there were another batch of Frasers.
Because my there it is. At Glen Shiels, many of them grants. I see it now. I did hear him tell of archers at Glen Shiels, many of them grants. My initial thing, because I didn't notice a mention of a specific battle, but it made me think because of how they used to go and poach cattle from each other in the Highlands, right? Different neighboring clans used to go, and there's a word for it, and I don't remember what it is.
Raiding?
Yeah, when they'd go raiding and like steal each other's cattle and whatnot. But if they'd catch you, then they would, you know, hurt you, kind of.
Okay, I did a quickie Google. There was a seven. I thought it was 1715. I know something occurred in 1715, so I cannot say what number that was, but I do know that something, it may not, this battle he was in may not have been related, but, and we don't get a year from Arch, but there was a 1719 Jacobite rising, and the Battle of Glenshiel took place on June 10th, 1719 in the West Scottish Highlands. So that is possibly where Archbug lost, or that's the place or the event that caused Archbug to lose his fingers. So what happened was he was part of the losing side, obviously, or at least he was captured. I don't know about his side, but he was captured and with some others, and he was a bowman, and he was a very talented bowman. Apparently he had had his first bow at 3, and he had fought against the Frasers. Now, when the Frasers would capture a grant on their land, they'd give him a choice: lose your right eye or lose 2 fingers from your right hand. Either way, that person would never draw a bow again. So it must mean that the Grants and their septs were known as fine bowsmen, right?
Yes, Bowmans? That was bowsmen. The whole point. They were known as bowmen.
And I thought it was funny, not funny that they lost body parts, but I thought it was funny that, well, if you're right-eyed and right-handed, okay, but it's not technically true that you'd never draw a bow again if they removed your right eye and or your right fingers, because I'm right-handed and I'm left eye dominant, and I have not done it consistently. Like I can't say I've done it consistently for 23 years, but I have. I first began my foray, if you want to call it that, my diddling with archery in 1997. And I learned real quick, and I probably have told this account on the show before, but I'm right-handed. And this is before I knew much, if anything, about eye dominance or handedness or cross dominance. And so I'm right-handed, so I'm shooting with my right hand. And so I have a partner. We have our haystack with a target on it, like, you know, 50 yards, 100 yards, however far it is, out from where we're shooting. And we're all outdoors, and I am getting so frustrated. Like, I'm about to, like, I'm not crying. I don't think it's crying as a baby. I got to the point where I was so frustrated that I couldn't help that these tears, not sobs, but like tears would form in my eye and they wouldn't fall out. But I was so upset and so frustrated. Like, I did everything I could. The teacher, the instructor said, okay, do this, do this, do this, do this. And I'm like, look, I am lining it up. The end of my bow, the tip of the arrow is hitting. Now, I'm not saying I'll hit the target like in the middle, but I am aiming toward that middle bullseye. And every single time it goes off to the right, like 3 feet to the right. Like the level is actually, like the vertical up or down is actually not bad. I'm just nowhere near hitting the hay. What's going on? And I said to the instructor, look, could you please watch what I'm doing? Tell me what the heck is going on. And he watched, and it only took him, like, I think he only watched me once or twice. And he said, oh, you need to choose an eye. You need to, well, first he said, you need to, you're closing the wrong eye. And I thought, wait, what? So basically, I'm shooting right-handed because I'm right-handed, but I was closing my right eye because I'm naturally left eye dominant. And so my left eye is looking, my right eye is aiming, my right hand. Basically, if you don't sight and shoot from the same side, you're going to have 2 to 4 feet difference. It's just what happens, because you are not shooting where you're aiming. That's the problem. And so he said, you can shut your left eye and use your right eye, or you can try to shoot left-handed. And I was like, huh. So I did it because I can't have things easy. I shoot left-handed. Mm. So all I'm trying to say is he, yeah. So most people, population-wise, most people are right-handed. And probably if you're right-handed, your dominance is going to be, your eye dominance will be similar. It's cross dominance. It's not unusual, but it's not like, it's not everyone that has it, right? Usually if you're right-handed, you're right-eyed. If you're left-handed, you're left-eyed, typically. So that rule of lose your eye or your fingers means you'll never draw a bow again. Not true. You could probably even teach yourself and overcome the dominance because they told me I can use my right hand and just close, you know, I may have to wear a patch so I don't, you know, forget to close the correct eye. But you can overcome handedness and you can overcome eye dominance. It's just practice. But apparently they didn't know about dominance back then, yo.
I'll tell you what I can't overcome.
Uh-oh.
Right-handed dominance. My left hand is not very good at anything. I have no fine motor skills with my left hand. I have been able to teach myself to do things that don't require fine motor skills, but even using a mouse, like I have a mouse that I've turned on to be a left-handed mouse, so I've reversed all the buttons. But making that mouse point at things on a computer screen that are small and not large, like little tiny buttons or little tiny check mark boxes, is almost impossible. I spend most of my day working right now screaming at my mouse and my hand. It's not good. I'm pretty sure my blood pressure is way higher than it needs to be. And I don't have a problem with blood pressure, but I feel like I've given myself one. But like, for, I can't hold a pen really. So I can't write with my left hand. I will never be able to write with my left hand. I can't chop things. I'm afraid to even touch a knife with my left hand because I'm so not good with being left-handed at all. And I know I physically can't hold a knife in my right hand because it is splinted in such a way that it is not conducive to holding anything at that angle. So I am completely and totally reliant upon meals that have already been chopped that maybe just need to go into a microwave, or I can cook whole. Like, I'm so limited, but it's not a skill I could learn. I could, and I have been trying since the end of August, trying and not succeeding. My eyes might be easier to train than my hand.
You could actually, if you, for some reason, not short term, lost use of your hand or lost your entire right hand, you would be able to overcome it. It may never be as dexterous as your right hand was, but you would be able to write with your left hand.
I would consign myself to a life of bad penmanship, not cooking food anymore, and just being overwhelmingly sad. I'm that right-handed.
Sad would be a choice.
Oh, and then I might die from high blood pressure because that's all I'm doing is feeling my blood pressure.
And that could also be a choice if you're not taking medicine. So there's a lot of things that you could attack there.
The only medicine that would stop this is something that would make me not care about any of those things.
No, I mean the blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure, there is medicine that will help with that. That's all I'm saying.
But it won't help with the cause.
No, that's true. But it might keep your blood pressure low while you worked on the cause. Maybe talked to someone. Maybe had a hand therapy.
Talking to somebody won't make my left hand more responsive.
You're missing the point. It's not about changing the outward situation. It's changing your inward situation. You can work on your mind because your mind has a lot of control about your outlook, your handling of things. No, it can't change like the physical fact that you either lost your hand or your hand's not working. That's not what I'm saying. But you can work on your mind for helping drive you how you want to be the rest of your life. Are you going to be sad about it? That's absolutely normal, human normal response to be sad or depressed about something like that. It's a huge and unfortunate and very tragic loss or change. But after some, you know, I don't know, I can't put a time on that because grief and that is completely individual. There's no one who should put a time on that. But once that period, whatever that period is, has changed at some point, it's a choice to remain in that. I'm not talking about depression. I'm not talking about that. But you, if you live till you're 80 with, you know, being upset or hating the world because you can't do something.
Oh, I wouldn't hate the world. It's not hating the world. It's a personal hate of how I'm existing within it.
Oh, I understand that. But there's, all I'm saying is the mind has a lot more power than many people realize or admit or recognize or whatever words you want to use. And if someone really wants to change, again, not change their physical circumstances, because I'm not saying you can have magical thinking and make your hand work. I'm not into, unlike Malva, or maybe not Malva, unlike others of this time in this book. Yeah, I don't believe in you can make a wish or pray and have something like, you know, like magic, your hand's going to grow back or your hand will start working.
Unless you're an octopus.
However, what?
Unless you're an octopus.
That's true. Unless you're an octopus. But...
which is really amazing. Have you ever seen that?
I haven't. Well, I've seen like little stumps of starfish arms grow back.
This is totally off topic and I'm going to do it as quickly as I can. So there's a film on, I believe, Netflix called My Octopus Teacher. And it's about this filmmaker who ends up free diving for over a year. And he basically befriends an octopus who's like super cool. But then she gets attacked by sharks. And because he's a filmmaker, he doesn't intervene when she gets attacked, because he's like, no, I cannot. If I do that, I am interfering with the laws of nature. So he doesn't do anything. And a pajama shark basically pulls her arm off, and then she regrows it. Like, it's not like it just grows out like a stump at the same size that it would be, but it's like a little tiny miniature arm that gradually gets back to the normal size of an arm. Like, it was fascinating. I forgot that they could do that until she did. It takes time. It's not like it's magically, it just like, bloop, I have an arm again, but it grows back tiny, and then gets like a little miniature version of all of her big tentacles. And then it gradually becomes the same size if they live long enough. But it completely regrows and completely has all of the same functions of the original arm.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was super cool. Anyway, I'm sorry.
It's called My Octopus Teacher?
My Octopus Teacher.
And it's on Netflix?
It was on Netflix. And I super, super enjoyed it. I cried. I laughed. I was adorably in love with
that. Did the octopus recognize her again and again?
Him. The octopus did.
See, that to me,
they're smart.
I knew. Well, okay. Aside from that, hold on. I knew, and I think most people, maybe not little kids who've never heard of this, but most adults, I believe, know the fact that octopuses, octopods, whatever they are, plural octopuses, the octopus can regrow appendages. So I think that part's not new. Like, not. I think it's a decently well known fact. What I didn't know was that I wouldn't say necessarily had an affinity, but that they could recognize, like repeatedly recognize specific humans. That would make me cry. That would make me very happy.
It was a she. The octopus was a she. The filmmaker was a male. So he would go down and he was free diving like without oxygen.
Flirting.
Yeah, so he would come and he would go and spend and swim hours with this octopus. But when he would come during the day, she would be in her little den or whatever, and he'd swim over near her den and she'd come out and be like, hey, buddy, what's up?
Wait, he dove for hours without oxygen?
Without a tank, he would be underwater and then he'd pop up for air and then he'd swim back down. But he would swim with her for hours a day.
Yes.
But he didn't want to wear the oxygen tank because he felt that it interfered with, because it was a kelp forest. So he didn't want to be, he didn't want any weird.
To disturb the air bubbles and everything.
So he was very cool. It was a good, I enjoyed it.
Is he single?
I don't think so.
Is he?
He has an adult child at this point.
Doesn't necessarily matter.
Okay, well, Ginger, I don't have the specifics on his love life. He's from South Africa. So that's another reason to watch it, because he's got a South African accent.
So Arch had taken up the axe because, as we have said, or we didn't say explicitly, but it's in the chapter, he chose to keep his eyes and lose two fingers. So Arch has taken up the axe. It's a weapon he could master with even without two fingers. And here's a quick take courtesy of Arch. Quote, a bow is like a good Wi-Fi, knows her master and answers his touch. An axe, though, an axe is a whore. Any man can use one, and it works as well in either hand. Unquote. Yes, that was...
T- To be fair, though,
that's my is that our title?
You know, Ginger, you change your mind many times during the course of a recording, and then again when you actually decide on what the title is going to be. So but I don't
do you
know
like that?
What the
okay? The no one. Of I horror? Agree. Neither of us can tell me. Can predict what the title will be because I haven't edited yet. And exactly. This is like a week or so away. But as far as so far, this is the funniest thing that has kind of come up. Do we want to something about your axe, something about an axe whore? How would you make it a funny title?
Okay. So Arch takes with whores. But I personally don't feel, I would not feel comfortable with an axe in my left hand, as I spoke of earlier.
Oh my goodness.
And I am not dexterous at all with my left hand.
He doesn't need to use his left hand because he's saying that it works with or without two fingers. So he can use his left hand, which has all of the fingers, and maybe not have as much dexterity or control over it, but he can use his right hand. And that's why... And he can have more control over it because he is right-handed, even if he's losing, even if he's lost two fingers. Later, Claire went to the Christie cabin to take the stitches out of Tom's hand. Tom's decided to go with God and let his hand take on whatever form it will. She tries to logic with him. Why would God want you to be lame? And then she goes, is it because I'm Catholic? She's like, she brings up the fact that his cow had fallen into a gorge and she'd been rescued and she'd survived. Claire could see her outside the window now. Claire's like, so what about messing with God's will, huh? Aren't you worth more than that cow that is even now healthy outside your cabin? She calls him out. You're afraid.
This was a real strong choice.
We knew this from last chapter.
Like, I think if Diana hadn't been the writer of this book, I don't know that this would have worked. Most men of the time period don't like to be shamed by women, and that would not cajole them into coming down and letting that same woman cut into them. I'm just saying, I don't think her method would have been successful with Christie, especially when he really insulted her by saying this particular Bible verse says women should shut up.
Well, I don't know how much, I know he intended to insult her. I don't know how insulted she was. She was upset. But if she were truly insulted, she could have said, you know what? F this. I'm not going to do your surgery anyway. And she would have left. She didn't let his targeted insult, because I do believe it was an insult from him. I don't believe she felt it as an insult. It made her upset, but she didn't take it to heart, or else she saw it as him trying further to get out of something because he was scared, and she was calling him on it. She was not. If he made a choice not to do it, that's one thing. But admit that he was, you know, don't do it because of fear. I get fear. She's like, I get fear, but don't tell me the reason you're doing it is because of something else. Just tell me, you know, be honest about it. And she calls him out. Like I said, she says, you're afraid. She tells him about the ether. She's done the surgery before, the exact surgery, and she can do it again. Finally, he acquiesces, and they agree that he'll come tomorrow.
Seriously, though, his big broken record, like, I was getting real tired of him continually going, I'll do it, and then the next day, I'm not doing it, and then the next day, I'll do it, and then the next day, I'm not doing it. Like, it was so broken record, I was at the point where I was like, then just don't do it. Let him have
tomorrow
a messed up hand, man.
At dawn, guns drawn.
Mm-mm.
And don't eat, she says. The next morning, will he come? What are the odds? Jamie says, he'll come. Or risk being seen as a coward. Now, Bree had made an ether mask for the application of the anesthetic. And then Tom Christie arrives. And just as Emmer said, he came all the way to say no.
Exactly.
That's just stupid. Come
like,
on.
Tired.
He must have changed his mind on the way because you don't walk
however many
miles just
that
to say
way.
No.
Oh, he totally did because he had to go because, as you said, not going would have made him a coward. So he was brave enough to walk all the way there and then say, no, thank you.
And he's changed his mind. And this time he's sticking to the popish stuff. Quote, he won't allow her to employ her foul potions on him. She straight up says, "You stupid man, what is the matter with you?" Now, he is not used, well, no one in this time is used to a woman speaking like this. So, I mean, this is one of those times where I'm like, let Claire out, let the real Claire out, because she is helping someone, not only not saving a life necessarily, but saving his livelihood, right? She already called him out, I think last chapter or a few chapters ago. She called him out when she was first looking at his hand and the condition, when she first recognizes what's happening to his hand. She's like, "Oh yeah, give this another 6 months and you will absolutely not be able to write anymore. How's that going to be for you? How's that going to be? You know, you're going to lose like people come." She didn't say this part, but she knew this. People came to him because he could write, right? Because he was learned, because he was scholarly, because he was smart and he could read something, or he could write letters for them, because they were illiterate or at least couldn't write. That was one of the only, because he was not a farmer. He was not a fisherman. Like, he couldn't really, they probably could, you know, raise a garden, have, you know, have the basics for them there at their home. You know, Alan was working in the garden when she went up, or no, chopping wood, I think. So they're taking care of themselves. But he was not a farmer. He was not able to really help out. I mean, he probably did put labor in and help out with the haymaking and all that. I mean, I would hope he would put in his, you know, his energy. But as far as being a huge contributor, he's not. So the one thing that not only he could do and pay for his family and his and himself and his livelihood, it was also something, understandably, that his pride was wrapped up in. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, to take pride in what you do. But him flip-flopping on this, and I say this as, no, I haven't flip-flopped like that, but I also haven't been in a situation where I have a choice or have to make a choice about having a surgery. So we're in an era where there is the option of, we have so many medical options, it's not even comparable. I totally get that. But he's allowing his fear, understandably, it's a scary thing, he's allowing his fear of the pain and his fear of the blood to...
No. He's allowing his fear of being unconscious around heathens.
Well, now, yes. But before the ether, it was, this is God's will for me. He was allowing so-called, yeah. So he was afraid, but he wasn't telling her, "I'm saying no because I'm afraid," which is, you know, what man, what person, man or woman, wants to admit that.
Yeah, but I loved when Claire countered with, you know, "Well, it was God's will that your cow got hurt, but you let us dig her out and take care of her. So you're saying you deserve less than a cow?"
Exactly. So he comes all the way. You're right. He did have enough gumption to get up there and tell her no to her face. And she's like, "You stupid man, what's the matter with you?" So Jamie tries to work as a mediator. He's like, "Do you want your hand mended?" But Tom wants none of the popish nonsense. Now, Jamie tries to convince him from his own experience with her working on his hand, and she hadn't even cut him open. She'd only mended it, you know, moving it about and reset the bone when his hand was injured. She hadn't, like, she may have stitched him, but she hadn't cut him open to work on him internally. And it was a crap ton of pain. And she's like, he's like, "If I had a choice with ether, are you kidding me? It hurt me and she didn't cut me the freak open."
Doesn't Jamie have surgery scars on his hands? Is that just show?
No, he has scars because his hand was mutilated.
I thought he had
like I said, she stitched him up, but she didn't, when he was recovering at Rannoch Moor and she reset everything, she didn't cut him open to do everything. She did it by feel, and because she was a nurse at that point, she didn't have the training, but she did it by the extensive training. She did it by feel, and then she popped a bone back in. But he had compound fractures in his hand. So Blackjack Randall had done the damage. She cleaned it up as best she could. So he does have scars, but they're not from her. Except, of course, she did, like I said, she sutured him up so the bone would stay. She straightened his hand out, the bone popped in, she set everything, and then sutured where was needed. But she didn't necessarily perform. I don't know. I'm not a surgeon. I can't say if that was surgery. You could call it a type of surgery. But unlike Tom's, where she must cut to do anything, that's what I'm trying to say. And so Jamie's like, "Look, I didn't have anything I had something different than you. But if I had had a choice or a chance at At Ether, you are crazy, Tom. I've been there. And it's bad. So he says yes to the surgery, and they at least give him wine. And Jamie also brings out a Bible for Tom, and it was the Bible of Alexander McGregor. I don't know how meaningful that is. It's just interesting because it links us back to Jamie and his time.
I feel like it's the only Bible Jamie owns.
Oh, that might be true. Since Tom didn't bring his own.
And, but it also, and it's a King James version of the Bible. So I don't even, it's the wrong version of the Bible, right?
Well,
for him.
Yeah. King James. Yes. King James. If it is King James, that would have been the, and still is, or for some people, it's definitely a Protestant Bible. Yes. It was a Protestant translation. It didn't have scriptures, okay, the Bible is the Bible, okay? But the Bible, typically the Bible that Catholics use, it's got the same stuff, but there are certain books were removed by Protestants. I will say that. Now, they had their reasons, but two of the books were 1st and 2nd Maccabees, I think because it included prayers for the dead, and Protestants don't believe that praying, number one, that you should pray to or for the dead, because once you're dead, you're dead and there's no help for you. Catholics believe that is not true. They believe in the communion of saints. So whether you're alive or dead, that it is worth praying for someone on their journey afterwards. Not that you can add to their life, but that's a whole other discussion that gets into, you know, religion. But they don't believe prayers for the dead are in vain, and which I find a lovely concept, right? Because why I would want to commune with my dead. I find that comforting, but that's just me. Something else they removed, I believe, was the book of James. I think it was James. I could be wrong. But it went with a verse that had to do with faith and works, something like that. Anyway, so it is slightly different in that it's going to be different, slightly different language because it's a different translation. But also, books were taken out for the. I don't know that King James did that. I believe Luther or people around that time did that. But yes, it definitely, the King James Bible does not have 1st and 2nd Maccabees and does not have, I believe, the book of James. I could be wrong on the James one, though. Anyhoozle, yes, very good point. It definitely, if it was a Protestant Bible, or if Alexander McGregor was Protestant, then yes. If we know for sure it's King James, then it absolutely is more appropriate for Tom Christie to have it. And I wrote down, it was the Bible of Alexander McGregor, the one that Jamie'd been brought when staying at the Hotel Garrison.
Hotel.
He's
Did
ready.
Did he find it in the little drawer by the bed?
The drawer. We have to ask Diana. Oh, Lord. Next to his camp bed. Yeah. So he's ready, Tom. She ties him down to make sure he can't move. And once the first slice is made, he's a-feeling it. And he nearly comes out of his chair. Jamie gives him some more drink and then starts reading the Bible to him. Claire is working away and Christy gets into a zone and he's reading and reciting along with Jamie. So it absolutely helps calm Tom Christy. And before you know it, she's done.
Yeah. Like I said, no way. that would not have calmed me. I would not have found any of that calming. And that's just me. I honestly can't think of a single thing that somebody could have read to me while they were debriding my triangular fibrocartilage complex and the, you know, shredded ligament they repaired. I don't think there's anything that they could have given me that would have, or said to me, sang to me, spoke to me, that would have made that okay at all.
She pats his hand and Bob's your uncle.
I love that she pats it. And I love that the last thing that she says before that, or one of the last things she mentions, is just the fact that she did. So she wrapped it in clean gauze. She put the fresh bandages on it. And then she fully straightened out his previously clawed hand. And he looked at it like,
That's a beautiful line. I missed that. That's beautiful.
So it was
very sweet.
Yeah. I was like, oh, like he was like, I've seen God. Because it was such a nice little thing where I was like, oh, it was worth it.
He says, I lifted the hand, wrapped a fresh dressing tightly around it, and pressed the clawed fingers gently back, straightening them. Christie's eyes slowly opened slowly. His pupils were huge and dark behind his lenses as he blinked at his hand. I smiled at him and patted it.
And I was just like, oh, like,
I think there was a large part of him who didn't believe she could do it, that didn't believe that anything could make it better because it was, you know, God's will. And, he, you know, again, he was scared. But, you know, it was nice that she was able to not have to hack his fingers off. Could you have imagined if she was in there and was like, Matt, sorry, we got to lose the fingers and he's awake.
Yeah, fun.
That would have been awful. Anywho, and that was chapter 23. Join us next week when we will be continuing our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read along with chapter 24 entitled A Touch Me Not.
A Touch Me Not or Touch Me Not?
It's Touch Me Not, but I put in a little emphasis of a touch me not.
Got it. I just want to, like, oh, that's an interesting chapter title. Okay, got it.
And if you'd like to join us to continue the conversation, you can join our group at www.outlanderpod.com/group.
Again, a very special thanks to co-producer Samantha.
To find out more about how to become a co-producer, if you're interested, you can find out more. Mm-hmm. Which is what I just said three times, I think, by visiting patreon.com/outlanderpod.
And if you'd like to put my art on your face, you can go to www.outlanderpod.com/. Why did that sound so weird? Slash.
That's what I do sometimes, and it sounds like
I'm Sean fake. Connery?
Yes.
Yeah. Slash. You go to www.outlanderpod.com/shop.
And for those who couldn't understand, that's the word shop.
Shop.
Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander 20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.